Okay, welcome back, everybody who has been waiting, and those of you who have just joined us. Thank you for coming to this call, The Three Greatest Barriers to Emotional Healing. As you know, I'm Raphael Kushner, and I'm delighted that you are with us this evening. At least that's the time we have here on the West Coast of the United States, where I am. The first thing I want to do before we get started is I want to mention that, as they say, it takes a village to raise a child, but it takes at least a small neighborhood to put on one of these kinds of events. And so I want to say some thank yous. One of them is to Julia Zaslow, my producer, and Kenny Bushman, my web guru. My email guru is Diana Pearson, and I want to have a special thanks to David Berger, who's running this call for us this evening. So thanks to all of you. And another thing that I want to do as we're getting started is talk about the goodies, because I know many people were excited to be a part of this call, because just for signing up, you're going to be receiving an ebook of the 10 most popular interviews so far from my series, Teaching What We Need to Learn. And you might be wondering, why isn't that in your inbox yet? And the answer is that we're putting the finishing touches on it right now, and hopefully within a week or two it will be ready. And we've got you all logged into our system, so you will absolutely be on the list of people who are given the download link to receive that ebook. So thanks for your patience with that, and I wanted to get that out of the way. I also wanted to talk to you briefly about the flow of our call this evening. I'm going to talk in segments about each of those three greatest barriers to emotional healing. And after each one, I'm going to pause for questions that you may have or comments that you want to share. We won't have time for that many, but hopefully one or two, if there are people out there who do have things they want to share. And when we're done with those three barriers, we'll move on to talking about the Vulnerability Project, which I'm super excited about and really want to share more about with you and hear your questions, concerns about it. And that's how we'll finish the call in the last 15 minutes or so. That's the flow. And now I'm ready to begin officially. And for those of you who have been listening to the interviews on Teaching What We Need to Learn, you know that I ask each guest to check in with me and therefore with you to let them know how they are, mind, body, emotion, spirit, in the moment that we're having our call. And I'd like to do that with you all as well. I'd like to ask you to just come into a little bit deeper presence and awareness of yourself in this moment, what it feels like to be in your body, any particular emotions that are moving through you, the kind of thought that you have, clear, muddy, peaceful, and anything else that you notice in your field of awareness. Perhaps you've been rushing. Maybe you had to get dinner quickly to make the call or took care of other responsibilities. So whatever's there in that background of your own life in this moment, see if you can just kind of exhale and relax into it and let it be as we go on together. And in the spirit of mutuality, I want to check in with you briefly. Some of you who've been getting my emails reminding you about the call-in information for this hour know that I had the flu and I'm just coming out of it. I'm grateful to say that I feel really good and energized right now, which tells me that I'm done with that illness. What I didn't write in the email to all of you was that at the same time I had the flu, I was also moving, which, of course, comes with its own stresses and challenges. So it's been a big, full, and I would honestly have to say kind of depleting time. So I'm especially grateful that I have some good energy to be here this evening. And I'm even more grateful to the gods of technology, because earlier today my phone system died and I wasn't going to be able to talk to you from my usual line. But that all got squared away as well. So that's another thing I'm grateful for, and which allows me to be really, really happy to be with you. So thanks for checking in with yourself and letting me share my check-in with you all. And what I'd now like to do is talk about the first great barrier to emotional healing. And that barrier is not knowing how to feel your feelings. And as I say that, I can almost hear some of you saying, wait a minute, that might sound too simple. I'm pretty sophisticated. I've been on the spiritual path for a long time. I've been in therapy for a long time. I know how important it is to feel my feelings, and that's what I do. And I want to first acknowledge that and to say that many of you listening now and many of the people who I work with around the world do have that background and have made great progress in that regard. And yet, I honestly have to say that this basic process that I call emotional connection is, in fact, simple, not easy, and very often misunderstood. So I want to talk about what it actually means to feel your emotions. And before I do that, I want to share with you about a survey that I do. Well, it's kind of a mock survey at the beginning of any workshop that I hold. I ask people to raise their hands if in their family of origin they got a great education in how to recognize, honor, and feel their emotions. And as you might guess, what happens usually is that people chuckle and snicker. And I think in the 10 years I've been asking that question, less than 5 people have raised their hand. And it's really important to say that it's not our parents' fault. That allergy to emotions and the direct experience of them is deeply embedded in our culture. And the best example of that, for those of us in the Judeo-Christian tradition, at least in terms of our upbringing, is that the 7 so-called deadly sins are actually emotions. Anger, pride, greed, lust, envy, sloth, and gluttony. Some of those are old-timey words, but you can see how each of them can have an emotional quality to them. And if, as I would say, our emotions arise unbidden out of our unconscious, and we're not in control of the feelings that arise, and they're deadly sins, well, pardon my language, but we're all then screwed. That's the tradition that many of us come from. And actually, it goes deeper than culture and history. From my sense, this allergy to emotions is actually wired into us through the messy course of evolution. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes. But first, what I'd like to do in getting there is talk to you about what is an emotion anyway. And for a working definition, what I'd like to share is that an emotion is a message from your mind delivered to your body as a physical sensation. And it's first important to recognize that I said mind instead of brain, because we do know that our intelligence is distributed throughout our entire body. It certainly includes our brain, but it doesn't not include, for instance, our gut, our heart, and the other ways that our body is part of our apparatus for knowing. So a message from your mind delivered to your body as a physical sensation. Now, the next thing to notice about that definition is that emotions are therefore physical. The only place that an emotion will ever arise, move through you, and depart is in your physical body. So if you want to actually and fully connect to your emotions, you have to, as someone once said, take the elevator downstairs. So with that as a working definition of an emotion, then I can talk to you about how to feel. And the best way that I can talk about how to feel is by using the metaphor of surfing. When a surfer is in the ocean and wanting to ride a great wave, the surfer needs to be so connected to the wave beneath him or her that there's an attunement with every movement and shift of that water, almost as if the surfer and the wave are one. The surfer also needs to be relaxed on the board, or else there'll be an instant wipeout. And another thing that's really important about surfing in the ocean is that the surfer has to really be in the present. In other words, if the surfer says, whoa, that was a really cool twist back there, as soon as the mind goes back to what just happened, wipe out. Or, uh-oh, what am I going to do about those rocks up there? Wipe out. So even when you're having a great ride and you're so relaxed, if you lose your attention, such as, whoa, interesting cloud formations, they kind of remind me of, wipe out. Now, if that connection between the surfer and the wave is consistent and soft, as I was describing, then the surfer is going to be one with that wave and get all the way to shore. So let's take all of that now and turn it to connecting emotionally. When you are surfing your internal emotional waves, your attention is the surfer. And your felt experience in your physical body is the wave. And what you're meant to do is to place your attention right up close where you're having the sensation in your body and follow it as it moves and shifts and changes and takes you to shore. In this case, the shore is something that I call an expanded state of consciousness. It means that you have paid attention to the way that the emotion wants you to pay attention to it. And usually, in just a short amount of time, even with a challenging emotion, it starts to ease and leave you in that refreshed and open state that I'm calling expansion. It doesn't mean that you'll go to some kind of heights of joy if you were sad or grieving or jealous or angry, but it means you'll be wide open again, and it means that you will have received the message that you got from your mind delivered to your physical body. So that's what it means to actually feel your feelings. It's to receive the message that is sent to you as an emotion, not by understanding it, not by learning what you're supposed to do, but literally just by directly feeling the sensation. And it's really important to make that distinction because it's so easy, once we have an emotion, to start trying to figure out what we're supposed to do about it or with it. But the message itself is actually just the feeling. And it's very difficult to do this for one particular reason, and that brings us back to evolution. Because there is a part of our brain that generates these emotions. Usually it's the limbic system, for those of you who are interested. But there's another part of our brain that's involved here, which I'll call the primitive brain. Sometimes you hear it as the reptilian brain, which is completely about keeping you safe and out of danger in any situation. And we need that to stay alive. But the glitch that comes down to us through evolution is that the primitive brain can't distinguish between an external threat, like footsteps in a dark alley, and an internal threat, like loneliness or loss or abandonment. So to be really precise and clear, our primitive brain perceives difficult and challenging emotions as life-threatening. And so even if we start out wanting to feel our emotions, we get the message, feel this, from our limbic system, Our primitive brain says, no way, and shuts us down. And that puts us at cross purposes, because one part of our brain is telling us to do one thing, and another part of our brain is telling us to do the opposite. The good news is that somehow in our brains and our beings is also the ability to rewire that evolutionary glitch. And that's what emotional connection does. And so the way to break through this first barrier is actually to notice when you're shutting down around a feeling. And this is something that we're going to talk about at great length and work on in the Vulnerability Project, because often the shutdown happens so quickly, we don't even know what feeling was present instantaneously beforehand. But we do have ways to recognize very quickly that we have shut down, or to use the word that I like to use, contracted. And once we know that we're contracted, we can start to surf that contraction right there. And what happens in that moment is that the primitive brain remembers, let's say, that while it has a lot of control, it's not actually the boss. And it's as if the primitive brain stands by and says, what, we're doing something different? I'm not so sure about this right now. I'll stand aside for a moment, and I'll reserve the right to shut this back down if I need to, but go ahead and do what it is you're trying to do. And so what happens then is the contraction opens. Every time it opens, and it puts us in touch with the feeling that we have been blocking. And then what happens is we move towards that expanded state that I was describing, and we realize, and I should say really that our primitive brain realizes, that the threat that it perceived wasn't real, and it has the capacity to update. And once it updates, it says, for example, rejection, not like footsteps in a dark alley, not going to kill us. And therefore, the next time that the feeling of rejection arises, we don't shut down as hard or as long, and we're also aware much more quickly so that we can surf that feeling to a place of greater openness. And that's, as I say, how to really recognize that first barrier to emotional healing and how to work with it. And I bit off a lot in that number one barrier. Can't really do it justice in a short amount of time, but look forward to diving into it with great detail in the Vulnerability Project. And also would be really happy right now if anybody has a question or a comment, something that they would love to share, to hear from you. If not, we'll keep going, but I'll let David look at the console, as we call it, to see if there is anybody who has a question. I'll be quiet for a moment, because sometimes what I've noticed is that people need a little bit of time to think, oh, I do want to ask this. And then if there aren't any questions, I'll just go on.
And if you'd like to ask a question, press star 2 on your phone keypad to raise your hand, and I can call on you and give you a microphone. And if you're listening through the webcast, you can type in your question through the instant message window. At the moment, we do not have any questions. Let's give it another minute.
Yes, but the good news is that all of you got a chance to hear and to meet David. So, David, thank you for joining in. And, again, thank you for helping out with this call tonight.
I'm glad to help.
Okay. So I'm looking and I'm seeing that nobody's asking a question right now, which is fine with me, but I always tell people when there are no questions or comments or what I call yeah buts, this is how I'm taking it, that you're all nodding inside saying, yes, Raphael, I'm with you 100%. This feels absolutely right to me. Keep going. I want to hear what's coming next. So if that's not the truth of your experience, I would invite you to be a little bit brave, because whenever you actually go ahead and ask that question that you're tentative about, not only do you benefit, but usually I learn something, and also other people probably have the same question as well. And so keep that in mind, even if there's no question right now, for when we go to the next two barriers that I'm going to discuss. Okay, so let's move on, everybody. The next barrier to emotional healing that is really significant and challenging in my experience is what I call thinking before feeling. And why this is such a barrier has to do with another part of the brain called the neocortex. The neocortex is the most recently developed part of the brain through the course of evolution. And it's the home of abstract thinking. And it's a problem solver. And it actually is a wonderful part of being human. It just thinks that it has the answer to everything and that its way is the only way. So that when an emotion has arisen that is difficult or uncomfortable, the neocortex looks at it as a problem to solve. And what it does at that point is it goes into an alliance with your primitive brain to keep that feeling from being present. Your primitive brain is blocking it with a contraction while your neocortex is trying to figure out how to get rid of it. Now, this is a big problem because when the neocortex is doing this, it makes a great show that it's being rational and that it's trying to help. It never admits that it's trying to get rid of the feeling. And it's very persuasive in telling us that it's actually seeing clearly. And this is the source of the greatest blind spots that we have in life. And the truth is that you have been or known someone who's been brilliantly perceptive in most areas of life. And then there's this one thing where everybody around this person says, oh my God, how can they not see that? It's right in front of them. That kind of blind spot, when something is obvious to everybody else, is the result of thinking before feeling. And it really gets in the way of our wisdom when it comes to decision making. But there's another part of thinking before feeling that's equally important to recognize. And that is that the neocortex recognizes those emotional experiences that have been or seem to be excruciatingly painful, and it actually tries to preempt them as a problem solver, you'll remember. And the way that it tries to preempt the feelings is by creating life strategies that are meant to avoid the feeling from ever coming up in the first place. Now, I want to pause for a moment and talk about that because that is the opposite of freedom. Freedom, from my perspective, that leads to the deepest emotional healing is recognizing that I can and I will feel everything that comes my way. I will surf the waves fully, as I described earlier, and therefore I will know that I can be with any and every experience that I have. And from that place of openness, I can meet what comes to me and also make the wisest choices. But the experience of constantly seeking to avoid unpleasant emotions ends up making it such that resistance to those emotions actually runs your life. So, for example, if you went through some very deep experiences in your childhood with, let's say, abandonment, you make a conscious decision, I will not have that happen to me again. I will not be abandoned. And so you look out there in the world as an adult for relationship partners who seem absolutely safe. It doesn't work, though. Many of you have had an experience in your lives where you could say, you know, the face changed from relationship to relationship, but I kept meeting the same person over and over. And that person always seemed safe, but somehow I ended up getting abandoned. And that's what it looks like on the surface when it doesn't work. But let me talk about what's happening underneath to create that situation. Remember, emotions are messages from your mind delivered to your body as physical sensation. Well, when you don't receive the message, they don't go away. They stay in your body energetically, neurologically, and biochemically. But they become, since you have turned them away, they become a part of your unconscious. And as a part of your unconscious, they have many ways to get your attention. One way they have to get your attention is stress, and stress leads to illness, and ultimately it can kill you, of course. But there's a much more, let's say, diabolical way that they have of getting your attention. And that is they bring into your life people and situations that will actually bring up that very same experience emotionally that you vowed never to have again. And what I'm saying here is really quite specific and important, because what it tells us is that it tells us that emotions are going to keep coming up over and over and over, especially the ones we vow not to feel, until finally we say, yes, okay, I will feel it. And when we say that, sometimes it seems like we've been working our whole lives not to feel that feeling. And then we do, and we find out something amazing. Certain research has just shown recently that the average lifespan of even the most painful emotion, as it's actually arising, not as we're thinking about it or brooding about it, but as it's actually arising before it subsides and leaves you in an expanded state, is really, perhaps, only about 2 minutes. So many of us spend a lifetime not free, resisting a painful experience that A, won't kill us, and B, won't actually last that long. But we stick to it because that very powerful neocortex, the problem solver, is convincing us that it's got the best strategy. And the strategy is avoid those scary, bad emotions. And if it worked in this sense, the neocortex would be our champion. But unfortunately, it never works. And we stay stuck until we can recognize that the neocortex is brilliant, that part of us is necessary, but when misapplied, it keeps us stuck. So that's why what I say is feel first, think later. Because when you're in an expanded state, you've ridden the waves, the intensity of the emotion has passed, your resistance has released, and you're in a state of openness and presence, that's when your powers of thinking and reasoning are at their absolutely most reliable. And in a moment, I'm going to see if you have questions or thoughts about this second barrier. But I just want to make what I described right now a little bit more visceral. Because I'm guessing that you're, many of you like me, and you've had a tough problem, something that you're working on. And you're kind of beating your head against the wall because whether it's writing a paper or figuring out how to approach someone, you just keep finding yourself stuck. And then you give up. And whether it's an hour later or the next day, you might be in the shower and the warm water is cascading upon you and the steam is opening up all of your pores. And suddenly the answer to your question or the solution to your problem just pops into being. It's so clear, it's so obvious, it's so right. That's what being in an open and expanded state can do for you, and that's what can happen when you feel first and think later. And in my own experience and the experience of all the people I've worked with, if we reverse that, if we think first and feel later, then we create more trouble for us and we stay stuck. So this is the next pause to see if there are any questions. David, do you want to remind people how to weigh in?
Sure. If you're on the phone, you can press star 2 on your phone's keypad. If you're listening by webcast, you can use the instant message window there right underneath the webcast player.
Yeah, and so I noticed also, David, that there is a question that came to us through the chat function from Dottie. So I'm going to go ahead and read that question out loud. Thanks, Dottie, for being brave to ask it, which is actually what your question is about. Dottie says, it sounds like taking risks to me, which I've learned doesn't kill me. The pain can be intense, but I survive. Does that fit with what you're saying? And the answer, Dottie, is absolutely. And what I found, just to underscore your question and your thought, is that in our society, we think of risk-taking on the external most of the time. So climbing great mountain peaks or fighting battles in war, situations that take the kind of valor that has, for better or for worse, what we might call a macho quality to it. But what I found is that the greatest courage comes in facing these internal challenges. And I've met so many men, for example, who identify themselves as brave, courageous, and are in some of those external realms. But when it comes to just the very bare act of opening to what they feel, they just wouldn't go there, you know, if you gave them $1 million. And it's sad to me that that's the case. It's my mission, in a way, to invite any and all who will listen, sometimes I would say especially men, to recognize that vulnerability is actually what makes us the most powerful. And it makes us the most powerful because, as I mentioned before, it allows us to be the most free and to access the fullness of our beings. So I'll just give you a little anecdote here. I've often thought it would be great to try to reach out to men in a special way to kind of reframe the issue about emotional vulnerability. And one time I went to a publisher and I said, what if I wrote a book called Emotions for Men? And the publisher said to me, that's the worst idea I've ever heard, because in publishing, what you're supposed to do is find a need in the market and then address it. And men don't consider themselves to have that need. Now, then the publisher said, if you really wanted to sell books, you should write a book called something like Teach Your Man How to Feel, and then you'd sell it to women. And I thought, well, first of all, I'm never going to do that, but I imagine doing it, and the first part of the preface would say, the one thing you've got to do is keep this book out of sight so he doesn't know that you're trying to work on him. But as you can imagine, none of that went forward, and we still have the challenge in our culture around reframing the idea of emotional connection and the courage that is required in order to do it. Okay, so Dottie, thanks so much for giving us that question and the opportunity to talk about that a little bit more. And I'm looking, David, I don't see any other questions right now. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, so I'm going to go on to the third barrier to emotional healing that I think is really important, and that is thinking while feeling. So there are many ways that we do this and that we then wipe out on the wave, to use the metaphor from earlier. The first one is when we are analyzing. And by analyzing, what I mean is, instead of really paying attention to what is happening right now, we really end up asking, why is it happening right now? And when we ask, why is it happening right now, it's almost always because we have a wish that if we could just figure it out, we could make it go away. Now, that should sound familiar to you, because that's related to thinking before feeling. So analyzing takes you off of the wave, and often you don't just wipe out, but you're no longer even close to it. You're gazing at it from a distance, trying to solve it as a problem rather than have it as an experience. Another way that we think while feeling is judging. And we judge in such a way that we ask ourselves, instead of what is happening right now and really tuning into that wave, what's wrong with what's happening right now? And usually that takes us very quickly to what's wrong with me. And we hear the shoulds and the shouldn'ts very quickly, like, I shouldn't be letting this get to me, or I should be over this by now. And those thoughts as well will just knock us right off the wave. Another kind of thinking while feeling is assessing how I'm doing. Am I doing this process right, this emotional connecting that I'm talking about? And we all have that part of our brain that is consistently just keeping track of how well we're doing things. But as you probably know, most of the time it's looking for how we're not doing things right. And those kind of thoughts can take us off the wave as well while we're connecting emotionally. There's one more in this kind of general category of thinking while feeling that we can call bargaining. And bargaining is, instead of really giving ourselves to the experience, opening, like Dottie was talking about and like I was talking about, we say something to ourselves like this: I kind of get that the fastest way through this painful experience is to feel it, so I'm going to feel it so that I don't have to experience it one more moment longer than necessary. And in fact, what's happening, therefore, is that you're kind of pretending that you're really willing to ride the wave, but you're actually not. You're trying to trick reality, let's say. And unfortunately, the feelings really know whether you're fully getting the message or not. And when you're bargaining, they don't really take you seriously, and so therefore they stick around until you're willing to feel them and get the message without the bargain. Now, the good news about all of those has to do with the way that surfing emotions in your body is different than surfing in the ocean. And that is, when you surf a wave in the ocean and you wipe out, you've got to paddle strenuously out to where the waves are breaking. You've got to hope that the waves are still there. Sometimes another wave will come in a minute, sometimes an hour, sometimes they'll be done for the day. However, when you wipe out on an emotional wave in your own physical body, you don't ever have to wait or worry about the next wave, because the next wave is always what's happening in the present. So you don't ever have to say to yourself, oh, I was really surfing that sadness, and then I lost it, and darn, let me see if I can go back and find it. Because that's the past, and the waves that are emotions in your body are always and only in the present. And that brings up another way that we think while feeling that really gets us in trouble. And that is, as soon as we start to feel it, we go to the future. Like, I can't feel this right now. I've got a big presentation coming up. Or, there's no way I can let all this grief move through me right now. I mean, I'm in traffic, for God's sake. So we start to tell ourselves stories about what will happen in the future if we keep having this feeling, which are all completely made up. And what they do is they only serve to keep us from staying on the wave in the present moment. Now, there's another part of that that's really worth sharing in this context. And the best way to do that is with a little story. I was working with a woman who was using emotional connection and practicing with vulnerability to work on ending her addiction to smoking. And she was having a huge pang of withdrawal. And I asked her, you know, as gently as I could, tell me exactly what's happening right now in your body. And she told me, well, my fists are clenched, my hands are sweaty, my stomach is tied up in knots, and my heart is pounding. And I said to her again as gently as I could, so can you just allow yourself to be with all of that? And she looked at me with very narrowed eyes, and she said, for how long? And, of course, to be honest, there's really only one answer to that question. And the answer is, for just this moment. And that's something that can really quiet our minds when we find ourselves thinking while feeling, is the recognition that no matter what we feel and no matter how intense it is, we only have to feel it for just this moment. And that's not like a trick or a spiritual saying. That's the way it really is. We have no idea how long it's going to last. And we can tell ourselves many stories about it, but actually we find with experience what some of that new science has demonstrated that I mentioned earlier, that even the most intense waves diminish much more quickly than the stories we tell ourselves about them when we just stay right there on the wave. So, if you can overcome that first barrier and learn to actually feel your feelings in your body, and then remember to feel first and think later, and also be attentive to when you find yourself thinking while feeling, and just keep coming back to the wave of the emotion over and over again, then you'll have the deepest kind of experience and the greatest freedom. And I don't have a lot of time today to talk about what happens exactly when you're on that wave for significant periods of time. But one thing that you find out is that we are deeply experiential creatures. We come to our knowing not just through our concepts from the neocortex, but also in a whole body way. So that sometimes when people are feeling, images arise, and the images take them from one place in the body to the next, and through those images comes insight or intuition. Some people don't just have a felt sensation, but they also have a sound or a specific vibration that comes to them while they're feeling. But all of this renders us fully alive and also most integrated. And that's why living as someone who is consistently emotionally connected is like being mostly in that shower I described earlier. Instead of feeling like we're pushing the boulder up the hill in so many aspects of our lives, we find things happening with greater ease and flow. And that's because we are relaxing into our experience, letting it come to us. And ultimately, for those of you who have a spiritual practice, a meditation practice, maybe you come to these issues, maybe you came to the series Teaching What We Need to Learn from one of your traditions, you might want to know just another quick way of looking at what I'm describing. And that is all about awareness meeting experience. And even though I don't practice or have great training in the Hindu tradition, I've always been really moved by the way they describe Shakti, the energy of all that arises, and Shiva, the consciousness that beholds that which arises. And in that tradition, it's said that when Shakti and Shiva are in exquisite union, that is enlightenment. And so from my perspective, enlightenment isn't a state that we aim to reach. It's a moment that happens. And when your attention and your felt experience in your physical body are in that kind of exquisite union, like Shiva and Shakti, or like the surfer and the wave, you are living an enlightened moment, and you are lit up, literally. And that's the power of emotional connection, and that's the power of vulnerability. Because vulnerability to our own experience isn't about being vulnerable to another person or being vulnerable in a situation that may or may not be safe. The vulnerability that is primary here and that I'm talking about is being completely open to what is. And in many of our cases, the most difficult places to be open are these challenging and painful emotions. And so for many of us, bringing Shiva and Shakti together is the ultimate or the last step in saying yes to the parts of our lives that we still haven't said yes to. And for those of you who come from other meditative traditions, you could say that surfing is a combination of mindfulness and loving kindness and also tantra. And mindfulness and loving kindness are mostly self-explanatory, but what I mean by tantra is not the sexual version of that tradition, but in the tantric tradition, the idea was that the greatest awakening was available not from going to sit in a cave and removing oneself from life's dramas and traumas, but from going into the storm and staying awake and aware right there where it was all happening. So the surfing metaphor that I use is essentially a kind of triple helix that combines mindfulness and the awareness that comes from mindfulness, the gentleness and the compassion that comes from loving kindness, and then also the willingness to go where it's the most difficult to go and right into it that comes from tantra. So I think that's a good place to stop in terms of the three greatest barriers to emotional healing. Let's check and see, before we move on, if anybody has anything they want to ask or add to the discussion. We'll just wait a moment again, as usual. And if not, we'll keep going.
And remember, if you're on the phone and want to ask a question, press star 2 to raise your hand. And if you're listening by webcast, you can type it into the instant message window.
Okay. So I'm just waiting another moment. And I know, like I said before, that everybody is, I don't have your vision. We're not doing a Skype call, but I can just tell that you're all nodding your heads and you're all anxious to learn more and practice more of breaking through these three barriers. That's what I'm getting, if there's no question. Okay. So what I'd like to do is to use the last minutes of our call to see if anybody has questions or comments or thoughts or concerns about the Vulnerability Project, in which we are going to be addressing these three barriers and much, much more to get to the place where you get a chance to find where you're not yet fully open, what's in the way, and how to remove what's in the way so that you can relax into full presence right there for your ultimate freedom. So if there's anything that you've been wanting to ask about the program, go ahead and ask it either in the chat window or by pressing star 2. And if you're wanting to just listen, that's okay. And I will take some of this time to talk specifically about what's most important to me about the program. And as I do that, if you haven't yet asked the question and something arises, all the way until the time we're done with the call, you certainly have the opportunity to do that. So I'm going to take a little sip of water here because I've been talking for a long time. That's good. All right. Now, so when it comes to the Vulnerability Project, if you have read the web page, which I'm assuming you have, you'll know that I'm very sensitive to not just the benefits, but also the drawbacks of online experiences. And from my perspective, as someone who has led online experiences and participated in them, one of the biggest drawbacks is that there's not enough of a sense of real safety and alignment and shared community among the people, because people are in it for different reasons. People have a different amount of energy and conviction. They show up differently in terms of how much time and energy they spend and how there they are for one another. So in the Vulnerability Project, we really can't have that yet. We can't have that because vulnerability, of course, requires not the usual amount of safety, but more safety. So what I've done in designing the project is try to create ways to really make sure that the people who sign up are people who are wanting to be there for each other and therefore know that that's the case across the board. Now, I didn't get a chance on the webpage to write all about this, so it's a good chance for me to describe it now in a little bit more detail. Hold on 1 second, please, while I clear my throat. Okay. So one of the things that we're going to do in the beginning of the project is ask people to sign on to a set of agreements. And those agreements are ones that we all are going to be accountable to for ourselves and for our partners in the project. And they're very simple, but they're also really essential. Like, for instance, I will participate in these basic ways, spending this much time communicating with the other people in the program as instructed. So what we won't have is those people who drop off, who, you know, you thought you had a good connection with and you were starting to feel like you wanted to open up to those people, and then suddenly they're not there and you feel kind of out in the cold. And we're going to be actually really, I want to say, especially mindful about this, because if, in fact, people aren't contributing, we're going to ask them not to keep participating. Not because we want to somehow be punitive, but because we're so caring about the safety and the bonding that needs to happen in order to do this deep work. So that's one really big difference about this program that I think is really going to allow people to open up more and feel safer to do so than they normally would in an online experience. Another thing that we're going to do, even though our hope is that many people will be involved in this program, perhaps between 100 and 200 people when all is said and done, we know that such a large group doesn't foster the kind of safety and vulnerability that is necessary for us. So we're going to create small groups within the large group. The large group will come together for our weekly interactive workshop-type phone time. But even when we're all there together, you'll be working primarily with people from your small group. And you will also have your own group website just for those people in your group. And we're thinking about somewhere between 10 and 16 people in your small group, which means that over the 6 weeks of the program, you'll actually have the opportunity to get to know them pretty well, to read what they share each week, to see their reflections to the questions that I ask, to see how their personal projects go, and to comment supportively on those projects that they'll be doing. So the experience will be for a large group of people, but the way that you'll experience it personally will be much more intimate and therefore hopefully safe and rewarding than that. And that's been my real passion in trying to design this project to meet the subject matter. And you can read about the subject matter, of course, on the webpage. And you also, you know, have access to my books and videos. So you kind of know the information in, let's say, a neocortical way, as we've been talking about earlier. And you know me from the series. I certainly have made it sometimes humorously extensive attempt to reveal myself in order to get my guests in the series to do the same. So you know who I am. You know what this work is about. But really, it's time to roll up your sleeves and do the work. And my promise is to give you a context to do that work, regardless of where you live and what time zone you're in such a way that you're really going to get the most out of it. So those are the pieces that are the most important to me that I wanted to address to you that I didn't get to on the webpage. And let me just pause one last time, see if anybody has anything about that that's coming up for them, any clarification, or even something that might be important to you that I didn't address that you'd like to hear about. For that, again, you can use the chat or you can hit star 2 on your keypad. And the other thing that I want to tell you about is that if you're listening to this recording after the fact, feel free to email me directly. My email address is easy to find, but I'll tell it to you again. It's rc, my initials, at kushner.com. And at any time from now until when we start the program on October 8th, if you have any questions or concerns that weren't raised here today, then go ahead and email me, and I will actually answer them personally because I'm so excited about the program, and I want to make sure that you have everything that you need to know if this is the right time for you, the right program, and the right fit. So let's see if there's anybody. Looks like everybody's holding on to their questions, and I really respect that too, because when it comes to vulnerability, sometimes it's easier to do that just in a private email with me. So I'll look forward to those emails. And David, I'm correct, right? It looks like we don't have any more questions.
Yep, we're all clear.
Okay, and it looks like we're just about at the end of our call time today, so I want to appreciate everybody for being on the call. It was great to share with you in this new way, and other than the fact that my voice is a little bit hoarse, I think I've mostly come through it just more grateful than ever to get a chance to reach out to you all. And I look forward to seeing as many of you as possible in the Vulnerability Project. So with that, I want to say another big thank you. And as I like to say in a lot of my emails, until soon, everyone. So thanks so much and good night.